Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 293 of the Roguecast, recorded April 30th, 2020. I'm a little chibi person.
Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural
radar. Yeah, we took care of that meddlesome Nick.
It's me and Dave and Anna.
No, I'm Nick now. Oh. Yeah. I was told when I was hired on that if I killed one of the managers, I got to become the manager. So.
Well, that's true. We meant like at the position. We didn't mean you actually morphed into them.
No, I've assumed Nick's life and identity.
You wear a Nick husk. You're a skinwalker and your prey is Nick.
Yep, exactly. I mean, now that we're about to distribute this information, I'm going to have to kill you guys too so I don't go to prison, but yeah,
you know,
that's about it.
There's no prison in virus times.
Oh, honestly, that's probably a good thing because I can only imagine that it's really shitty for the people who are in the prison.
Pretty terrible, yeah.
So, but Anna, we haven't had you like on the podcast in a few months. And like, as far as people haven't kept up with you for store stuff, or haven't seen you in like a month or month and a half or so, maybe. How are you doing?
Have you seen Color Out of Space? Because I'm Nick Cage in that movie. my descent into madness has been
Nick
slow.
Cage? Or end Nick Cage.
Oh, I'm end Nick Cage. I am covered in the blood of farm animals and screaming in my dead father's voice.
But you are not Steal the Declaration of Independence Nick Cage.
No, that Nick Cage is cool compared to the Nick Cage that I am.
You know, have you seen, Anna, have you seen Mandy?
Yeah, she comes to the store every once in a while.
You silly goose.
Screaming in my dead father's
I meant
voice.
The Nicolas Cage movie, Mandy.
I actually haven't, and if there is a place where it is streaming, I would love to watch it.
Yeah, I don't know,
it's
but
on, like, Shudder.
It's a fun place to see another blood-strewn Nicolas Cage, and it's a weird vibe. There's nothing quite I can think of like it, but it has, like, it's both slow-paced and insane at times. But a lot of the movie is slow paced. It's actually kind of weird and 80s chill, and there's animation in it, and like it sort of feels like, I don't know, like there's like a synth soundtrack. It's
oh,
so
cool.
Bizarre, but you should. I feel like you should see it.
Have you seen Drive Angry?
No.
Oh man, Dave, what? How
weird
have you not seen Drive Angry?
Chill and
Nick,
there's animation
like
in it, and
animation.
Like it sort of feels like.
Wait, it's
the,
so good.
Staffer, that's more Nicolas Cage oriented than I am overall.
I know, that's why I'm telling you that you should see Drive Angry.
Oh, that's right, because you're Nick.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you can tell me where it's streaming, I will watch Drive Angry. I'm ready to see crazy, more crazy Nick Cage to get us through these
Dave,
quarantine times.
Dave, which Nicolas Cage are you right now?
Which Nicolas Cage am I?
Yeah.
I am just freed from prison, Con Air, billowing hair.
All right,
well, if you can tell me where it's streaming, I will watch Drive Angry. With the quarantine, my hair is a little longer than normal. Y'all can't see it. But anyway, it is billowing lightly, though.
I am Caster Troy Nick Cage, who is actually John Travolta, as he's beating someone with a tray of food, trying to convince someone that he is Caster Troy.
With the quarantine, my hair is a little longer than normal. Y'all can't see it. But anyway, it is billowing.
We should probably get to the podcast.
Oh, is this on the podcast?
No, this is the podcast now.
Oh my god. What has happened?
So we've been slowly gathering up topics and stuff and doing these occasional podcasts, and as we go through, I'm just kind of deleting the stuff we've gone through, and we still have like dozens of things, and then Anna's joining us, and she had a few things to add in, so we're going to talk some games and stuff that we've been playing. We're going to talk about movies, TV, that kind of thing.
We can't do new comics right now, but in a few weeks we will be able to. What are we looking at? May, what is it?
May 20th. So this is probably a good time to actually mention the store-related stuff, which is to say, we are not opening on Friday because we're not insane. We are in fact going to continue doing curbside delivery. We're open Monday through Saturday, 11 to 6. We're going to restart delivery one day a week for a $5 fee. If you have a $25 order or higher and you're within 15 miles of the store, you can put in for delivery. We're going to try to do that once a week if we get enough orders. And then we'll have an announcement that will have gone up about the time this podcast does, that Monday we are going to start doing scheduled visits. Like, if you want to schedule a half-hour period where you can come in, browse the store or higher, and you're within 15 miles of the store, you can put in
take a look at everything, and we're going to try to do that once a week.
We're going to start doing that sort of slowly, working toward the notion of being open with social distancing rules.
Yeah, we
when new comics start up.
We weren't comfortable with the idea of just letting people just kind of pile it on in. Even within limitations, it seemed a bit much, so we'd rather do sort of one per, keep it real safe for a little bit.
Yeah.
If we get enough orders, the flood slowly,
working toward the notion of being open with social distancing.
Yeah, no, we're not opening.
Yeah, we
help make that decision easier. And Alamo Drafthouse basically saying, yeah, no, we'd rather not have the money. We'd rather stay alive. Help with
yeah.
that, too.
Good on
so,
them.
Yeah, yep. It definitely made my decision a little easier. But yeah, it's a weird time, guys. It's a weird time. We
it
do
is.
Really appreciate everybody who's been supporting the store. We're definitely feeling the pinch. It definitely does not feel like we're open in a lot of ways, but having people call in and get orders and getting to occasionally like see through car windows and stuff, talk to people, it helps a little bit.
Yeah,
little
and we've talked to them on the phone and through Facebook and through emails.
Yeah.
So it's nice. We have been in contact with a lot of our customers, and they've been really very, very magnanimous and supportive. And it's I'm glad to know most of them have been doing all right.
So let's talk about games.
All right.
Dave, you've been playing No Man's Sky, which, by the way, my son is turning 13 in June, and he wants this for his birthday. And I kept telling him, I'm like, I think you're going to be bored. Do you think he's going to be bored?
Yes. yeah, no, like, so here's the thing, like, doesn't Aaron play Minecraft as well?
No, not really.
Oh, okay.
But he doesn't play it anymore.
So the kinda part like... about this game, which is a big open world sci-fi game, very, very exploratory and not action-y, is that it has, like, Minecraft elements. There's recipes, essentially, and mining and gathering of things to build structures, weapons, gear. But it is not a big action game. It feels like you're doing exploration, and it's kind of zen. There's living creatures, but not mostly... And there's, like, spaceports on planets, but there's not... frequent combat. There's not a set storyline like Mass Effect. It's a little bit more like Skyrim, where you can kind of pick and choose what you want to do, but action is like, I feel like, third or fourth as far as like what's important to the game. Building and exploration and stuff like that are, and also just observing the super beautiful graphics are kind of like, I think, the big ones. And this game, of course, came out like pick and choose what you want to do.
4 years ago,
but action
like
is like I feel like
ago?
Third or fourth. And it was at the time it was really hyped because it had this procedurally generated universe with multiple like thousands of galaxies, and within those galaxies, thousands of star systems. Literally, there's like generated like 50 quintillion worlds or something like that. It's crazy, but because they kind of they have an algorithm that generates them. And when it came out, it did not live up to expectations. In fact, people were very harsh with it. Really, there's like generated like
yeah, I actually played it on launch. Real easily bored if I don't have like a set goal. So like being like, hey, here's a sandbox and a bunch of toys to play with, I'm gonna be like, I'm gonna go inside and do something else.
Right.
So it like very much is not my game, but like for the people who do like have that like self-driven creativity muscle, I've heard that a lot of them really, really like it, especially now that they've like gone back and made better on some of the promises that they made.
Right. There was like a, you know, it's been updated constantly.
Yeah.
But I think about like maybe 2 years ago or so, there was like a big mega update that all but changed what kind of changed the game. And like after that, it started getting really strong reviews again. So
yeah.
Yeah. Randy, definitely don't get it for Aaron. Like, I love it. It's really...
Will
I was
watching
Lost in Space.
Will you please convince my son he doesn't want to play this?
What's that?
Will you please convince my son he doesn't want to play this game?
Yeah, I'll do it. I don't know. Has he been watching videos of it? He's a YouTube kid.
Yeah, he's been watching videos of it. Yeah, he knows what he's getting into.
Interesting.
He knows what he's getting into. Like, I love it.
Yeah,
it's,
for me, it's all
it's
about,
really,
like,
I was watching, please... you can, like, go from, like, just walking around on a planet's surface, interacting with its weird alien animals and plant life, to mining. You know, you can mine stuff down there, but when you're ready to take off in your ship, you just fly up right through the atmosphere without loading screens and stuff like that, and then you're in orbit around it, and then you can, you know, fly to other planets, you can warp to other planets, and then you can warp to other
weird alien star systems,
animals,
and galaxies, ultimately, to mining.
When do
you know.
When do you spend the shells to buy stuff from a raccoon?
That's
oh, man.
The other game that... You know what? There is a weird similarity between it and Animal Crossing, because Animal Crossing has the recipes, I think, and stuff for building houses and furniture and clothes and all that stuff. So there is, it's not quite as weird as it seems. What was it? People were saying that, like, Animal Crossing was like Sims by way of Miyazaki or something like that.
Yeah,
I can see that.
That's probably a good way to describe it.
And I feel
are you playing that one, Anna?
Yeah, boy howdy. I'm not doing much but playing that one.
you are doing Animal Crossing?
Yeah, I am.
People were saying that, like,
Animal Crossing was a delightful house? Are you collecting
Sims by way of Miyazaki or something?
I built a delightful house. It has a bed and a coffee machine, so it's just like my real-life house.
Nice.
And there's nothing else in it. And I have five villagers and a couple of, like, amenities and things, like a store. And mostly what I do is randomly fly to other islands,
delightful house.
Pillage them for resources.
It has a bed and a coffee machine, so it's...
That's all I do.
That's the first time I've heard anybody put a kind of predatory spin on that game. It's so delightful looking.
Anna, if you were to jump Tron like into your Animal Crossing game, I believe you would behead yourself.
But in like from boredom or wait, why am I?
No, you'd get the guillotine out for holding things like a dragon.
Oh no! There are a lot of other people I would guillotine first.
You know, the island traveling to islands for resources is a lot like traveling to the other planets in No Man's Sky. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is. Like Dave and I were doing the exact same thing. Only Dave is in space, and I'm in an island full of cute animals and one capitalist.
And you're a little chibi person.
And I'm a little cheapy person.
And I was like a cool space explorer person.
Well, I don't know if I would say cool, but space explorer person.
Actually, people know, people who follow me on Facebook, my Facebook friends know that I love taking pictures of natural settings and stuff. And the screenshots from No Man's Sky are just, the graphics are a very show-off kind of game. And you can get these really cool shots where you're like going around the rings of a planet, or you're pulling up to like a space station that dwarfs you, or weird aliens. And as you say, it's definitely not for everyone, but like for me, just doing that stuff alone is like super fun. I feel like I'm literally walking on the surface of other worlds.
Out of curiosity, are the aliens in it also procedurally generated? Is it like,
yes,
you'll run into an alien that just has like weird parts slapped onto
it? There are like three major sort of sentient alien races, and they do actually have some small set storylines, and you take missions from space stations and you interact with them. And, you know, there's like a sort of more aggressive, I'll just say Klingon-y type one with honor and stuff like that. There's a sort of more,
The Quarians
like
in Mass Effect.
Sort of sentient
they wear
alien
helmets
races,
and they're like
and they
sort of more like
have some weird digital inhabitants of these bodies that last for thousands of years. But anyway, they're kind of the NPCs that give you missions and you interact with. When you're on a planet's surface, though, in general, what you're more likely to run into is lots of benign wildlife and occasional aggressive wildlife, and they are procedurally generated. Everything from kind of like dangerous old dinosaur things to small, adorable, scuttling little dog insect people things.
Did you, this was like 10 years ago now, but did you play Spore by chance?
No, I remember it being around. Spore one where you like you went through evolution of like a whole species or something?
Yeah, you would like start out as like a freaking like single celled organism and build your way up to space travel. But the reason that I bring this up is because I assume that they're either randomly generated or like that players have some hand in like these weird monsters that float around like they do in Spore. How many of them just happen to look really phallic or silly? Because I'm curious.
I think they have come up with basically the mix and match parts are not very phallic, and I think they were pretty careful about that.
That's probably a good thing to take away from Spore, because let me tell you,
I can only imagine. In fact, I remember seeing pictures. Yes,
yeah.
But I do want to say there's one creature that looks a bit like a big old, you know, like Dupe from X Factor or X Force or whatever.
Yeah,
he looks like a little. Yep. He looks like a Dupe if Dupe were like, oh, I don't know, half the length of a car, and and he's like, they're like hopping around, and he has this kind of giant, like, gleeful grin on his face. I can only say it looks like a weird sort of alien O-face, or like a Totoro O-face.
A Totoro O-face, if you will.
Because you can ride on certain animals, I was riding on one of them. And with that face on him, let me just say that the pictures did look a little messed up.
Okay.
All right. A weird sort of alien O-face. So if you want O-face, to or like a Totoro make the O-face. Game nasty and gross, you
a
can.
A Totoro O-face.
Anyway, that's what I've been playing. What about what else we got, Randy?
So yeah, we were going to talk about also. You and I both play the video the app version of Star Realms.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've got Star Realms the physical edition, but there's some cool stuff that is like specific to the app, like campaigns that you can play solo, as well as it's pretty easy to just link up with other players.
Yeah, the multiplayer is good. I've been playing with a friend for a long time now. We play it pretty regularly, and you and I haven't played in a while.
Yeah, you're right. We should definitely do that.
The nice thing is you can do it like a 48-hour thing. So it's like you just kind of play a turn, and the other person plays a turn, and it's not like you have to be intensely watching the game. You just are kind of playing back and forth.
Every once in a while, you're both on at the same time, and maybe you finish up the game then, or you go through a bunch of different moves. Yeah. But
They keep expanding it. They keep adding on to it.
Yeah. And so it's like cool stuff too.
And they're all like, you have to pay for them, but it's like you pay for them and you get a package of new cards and stuff like that. And you get more campaign, you get like five or six
single player.
You finish
up the game
player,
then, or you
like
go through a bunch of different moves.
That kind of thing. And I haven't slowly adding stuff in, and I'm always enjoying it. Like, it's always worth the money.
For those that don't know, it began as a 2-player game. I think you can now do up to 4 players in the new versions of it. But it is a deck-building game of where you build, like, a sci-fi fleet from kind of building from a buyer's row.
There's also slowly adding stuff in, and I'm
different
always
alien
enjoying
species
it. Like, it's
with
always
their very
worth
different
the,
types
the
of ships. For those that don't that interact with each other differently, and when you pull a hand, if you get multiples of certain types of aliens, you know, you're going to get more healing power, more attack power. You can make your opponent lose some of his playing ability. You can pare down your card with the machine cult cards, which are all about efficiency. Interact with each other
but
differently.
If you play any deck
pull
building
a hand,
whether
you
DC's
get
deck
multiples
building game
of certain types of aliens
or any of those,
you know, you're going to get
the basics
power,
instantly.
More attack power. You can make your and it's got great art on it. The ships all look cool.
What
machine
would you say? A game plays
for those
like,
that don't
on the
interact
app
with
what?
Each other differently.
If you were to play it, not
pull a hand
a
few turns, or, but you know, just straight up, what, 15 minutes?
Oh, just like, yeah, straight. Oh, yeah, because it's only like probably go 20 turns at most. Like, it's pretty fast.
Yeah, and once you'll pick up the game pretty quickly.
What would you say?
A game
plays
like
that.
On the app, and if you were to play, I love it to pieces. I can I do that thing where I do the one more game kind of thing. Now, I'm usually playing the AI, same. And I play it on hard these days, and I do pretty well against it. I win more often than I lose, but it can take me sometimes.
So I'm going through the campaigns right
now.
I
love it
goals.
To pieces.
Like,
I do that thing where I do like, one more game.
Where it's like, do it, but have 50 health left at the end.
Right.
And so I'm trying to get 3 stars on all of it.
I do pretty well against it. I win more often than I lose.
It's a little tricky.
But I know it can take me sometimes. I know, Randy, that you have run into this.
I love it to pieces.
I do that thing where I do the hard. And sometimes they can make you want to throw this game through a window and never play it again.
I got to the point where I'll restart a game at a drop of a hat. I'm like, oh, wrong. If I'm trying to get 3 stars and it's like, have more machine cult cards than
like,
your opponent.
If you get off on a bad foot.
If it starts and there's no machine cults, I'm like, restart.
That's wrong, sir.
What's the point of play? Like, I can tell I'm going to play and lose the game. What's the point? I'm Groundhog Daying it.
You never know if you might pull out a Rocky. that said, no, I get it, because it is in the game. I love this game, but every once in a while I'll hit a mission that's infuriating. And I will say that when I've made it through
the game,
I'm
what's
like,
the point?
Now
I'm Groundhog Daying.
I feel like Conan after he's been on the Wheel of Pain, and he's giant, and he's a big, he's swole. Anyway, but yes, Star Realms is a great app, and I highly recommend it.
I wish they'd put the Hero Realms into an app too, because the Hero Realms version, the fantasy version, I really like as well.
Yeah, and it uses similar principles, but it's got some of its own unique stuff. And I think the one that they had where you can play multiple players against like a boss threat would probably adapt pretty well to a campaign and stuff like that.
Yeah. The other app game I wanted to mention I've been playing is Sagrada, which just came out. Sagrada is the stained glass window dice game, which we do really well with at the store. They have an app version. It's like $7, which is expensive for apps, but cheap for games.
Right.
It's a really good translation of it. I've been playing. It's got a campaign mode where the campaign is basically just like it sets the rules up differently each time. But I've been playing my way through that and having a great time. I have not been able to do the online multiplayer just yet because it does not have a multiplayer as robust as Star Realms where you can challenge people. It's more of a, hey, start a game with five random people, which to me sounds like hell. So I've not played the online mode just yet, but I'm actually really digging the single player mode. And it's a, like I say, it's one of those games. The board game version is a game that I have a few people who they play one or two board games, and that's one of the ones they play.
Oh,
it's really pretty. It's really
And I still have to play
it.
I still need
replayable.
To play that one.
Yeah. Okay, let's divert from games and talk about movies and TV and stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, the first one, and Anna, I don't know if you've watched this or not. Have you seen Onward?
Is that the Disney movie with the troll people?
Yes.
Yeah.
I actually haven't.
No.
Wait. No.
Well, he's a little fantasy character person.
Like a little, yeah.
Elf,
sure.
He's elf,
yeah.
Elf people. Yeah.
Wait. It's modern times.
It's not.
But...
It's not It's not trolls.
Right.
No, you're right. You're right.
It's not trolls.
The one with the troll people is trolls. Yeah, the one with the troll people is trolls. My bad.
To make sure we're not talking about Trolls World Tour. Trolls World Tour, which
cost
Universal the movie theaters.
Oh, yeah, it's some weird stuff.
Incredible.
You guys saw this, right?
No, what happened?
You saw this. So Trolls World Tour, they released it because we're in pandemic times. They released it to digital only.
Yeah.
They released it to... And it did so well that they were like, oh, well, we're going forward, Universal is going to consider doing, releasing to theaters and digital at the same time. And AMC, one of the biggest theater chains, was like, no, fuck you.
Fuck
we don't
you.
Like that.
Yeah.
We're not going to carry Universal movies anymore.
What?
They said they're not going to carry Fast and the Furious or any of that. It's
what?
Crazy.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
What?
You know what I've noticed?
Yeah.
During pandemic times, people are doing a lot of kind of snap decisions. And I do think it probably behooves all of us. And a lot of people, you'll see this when they release a message, here's how the store is operating or the restaurant or whatever. They're like, all of this is subject to change because things are changing rapidly right now. And it's probably good for everybody to keep that in mind and not necessarily flush your theater franchise down the toilet. So,
haphazardly. I mean, it'd be like if DC had announced their stupid thing with the other distributors and sending comics out, if I'd said, oh, well, we're not carrying DC Comics anymore. No, I'm not an idiot. I'm pissed at them.
Yeah. Well, on the other hand, though, I am starting to notice a startling amount of middlemen who are I guess I don't want to say... Wow, geez, maybe I shouldn't say this given that I work at a retail store. But I'm starting to notice a startling number of things that previously people maintained you can't work from home, that's not relevant, or oh yeah, we can't digitally release movies, that would be insane. Where suddenly it's where did it come from? That now that it's now that it's possible. Of course, you still miss out on things like being able to go and chat with your favorite worker at Rogues Gallery about the podcast that she made you listen to. But yeah, like
the thing is, like, I'm like, yes, we can do it like this, but it's awful and I hate it.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely is terrible. Don't get me wrong. I'm going stir crazy like a motherfucker over here. but, you know, like for people like, I guess, like my folks who, you know, they don't get around super well. Like the ability to work at home is like a life changing thing for them. So.
Right.
Yeah, my wife is like, my life has changed. In almost no ways.
Yeah.
she's like basically the same for her.
Yeah.
All she has to do is deal with me freaking out more often. So back to Onward.
Sorry.
Onward, yes.
My bad.
Anna has not seen Onward, but you should see Onward because it's delightful.
Yeah, Dave, you wound up liking it. I think you were skeptical.
Yes, and I was even skeptical a little bit getting into it. Like, I was like, oh, this is fine. It's nice. And this is how I guess a lot of animated movies are for me. I don't necessarily always like look forward to them or seek them out, but when a well done one comes around, and I'm like, ah, you know what, that was really good. And this is the one that's kind of got a good. Well, yeah, it's set in the present, but it's a fantasy world where, like, you know, it's the modern day, and the characters, like, you know, fantasy conventions are just kind of folded into their normal suburban lives.
Oh, that's cool.
But yeah, Randy, what's the what would you say sort of the premise is? Who are the key characters?
Yeah, so the basic pitch is that it starts with, I thought, was a really good setup of, like, it shows the fantasy worlds, everybody's using magic, and then someone invents a light bulb, and they're like, oh, we can just use this instead of casting a spell and accidentally burning down the village? Yeah, let's do that. And so I thought that that was a good way to transition. And so we start in this era when basically technology is everywhere and magic is kind of like, they don't use magic. Like, there's still unicorns out there eating garbage, and there's still stories of, but the basic story is that
they kind of defanged the fantasy world.
Yeah. One of the characters is turning 16. His older brother is a guy who plays like a Dungeons and Dragons game that he believes is very historically accurate, because it is also all when magic was there. As his 16th birthday present, this kid gets a thing from his mom that is his father, who died before he was born, after he was born, and it turns out to be a spell to bring his dad back
for a day.
Historically accurate. Because it is also all when
magic
was there.
They kind of muck up the spell, and they manage to cast it,
where they bring back his legs, but not the rest of him. And so they have to go on a quest before the day ends to try and bring the rest of him back. They need this crystal, and so they have to go on a quest to find this thing to bring their dad back before the end of the day.
Did you say his legs back?
Yeah, just his legs.
Yeah,
he has a glowing waist.
They magically start to appear, and then comically, he is a pair of legs for pretty much the whole movie.
Okay, I was thinking it was like much more horrifying than it being glowing torso floating in the air.
It would be like in an old timey cartoon if somebody if their legs were just dancing on their own, and that's what.
Oh, that's a lot nicer than what I was thinking, which is like the Full Metal Alchemist. Like, oh yeah, we brought our mom back, and she's just like a pile of bones and stuff that's like groaning, and I was like, that's super dark.
So they go on a big quest to get this gem so they can bring their dad back, and as with all Pixar movies, it's all about sort of missing your father figure and brothers and the ambition and lack thereof and all this kind of stuff, and it's really good. It's got this fantastic sequence at the end where they build this gem.
Accidentally want to build a dragon out of their school.
As with all Pixar movies, it's all about it's like its roar is the school bell, which is a nice little touch.
Huh.
And the two brothers, we should say, one of them, the lead character is kind of, what would you say, kind of a nebbish guy, Randy?
Yeah, he's a nerdy guy who doesn't have a lot of friends.
Right, and he's probably a little like lacking in ambition. He feels like he hasn't really lived a good life. And then you got his kind
it's
of
like its roar
slightly
is the school
goofy.
Bell,
he would be a stoner in a different movie. Older brother.
Oh yeah, he's a metalhead. He's got a van with a unicorn paint on the side.
Oh
yeah,
so the cool.
But he's super enthusiastic, and he's real. He kind of like he's a good brother to his brother. He's not like. He's both kind of a loser and a winner, and is a little bit more nuanced than expected, and is like the source of a lot of the humor, I guess I'd say, in the movie. And also the difficulties in the movie.
He's super
is their
enthusiastic, and he's real...
And also
he
the
like,
characters that play voiced by Tom Holland, Chris Pratt, and the mom is Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and she's a good character, too. There's like a subplot involving her and a... What is it, a chimera?
A manticore.
Yes.
And I forget who... Is it Niecy? It's not Niecy Nash. I forget who voices the Manticore, but she's great.
I forget.
Great.
She's almost literally been defanged and now runs, like, what, like a theme restaurant or something? Like the Manticore theme restaurant?
I think it's Tiffany Haddish. But that's fun. They also, they do a lot. There's a lot of D&D references. There is, in fact, a gelatinous cube at some point.
Yep.
That's great.
It's a lot of fun.
The gelatinous cube, isn't that one of y'all's favorite monster? Or
am I crazy? I think who's a D&D person has to like gelatinous cubes.
Oh, I don't like gelatinous cubes. No. They're just so weird.
It goes
Owlbear, Beholder, gelatinous cube.
I think
that sounds about right.
When I was a kid...
I might throw a rust monster in there, but in-game, they're actually no fun.
When I was a kid, my great aunt used to make, like, jello molds with, like, stuff floating in it. And so whenever I see a gelatinous cube, I'm just thinking about, like, some weird-ass combination of pecans and pineapples floating in, like, just a horrible gelatin. So...
We need to have a D&D party and have somebody make a gelatinous cube jello.
Yeah, that sounds grotesque. I'm in.
We can put some little miniatures of skeletons in there, and then people can choke
candy
to death
skeletons?
On them.
Yeah, little candy skeletons.
No, they should be candy skeletons.
Yeah, I guess you could probably do that. We can get some Dia de los Muertos ones.
Yeah, no, that sounds delightful.
I like this idea. All right, so we're at about the 30-minute mark. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about some more movies and TV. All right, we are back. Let's talk about another space that's, or another movie that's very much like Onward, Color Out of Space.
Anna, you saw this more recently than any of us. Randy and I caught it in the theater a few weeks ago, and watched it.
For those who don't know, people used to gather in large numbers and watch movies together.
Right, that was before we had to shelter in hovels 1,000 feet below the Earth's surface.
In the before times, Dave and I saw this movie. Anna saw it just recently.
Yeah, I thought that Color Out of Space was a heartwarming tale about mother and son bonding.
messed up.
Much like I assume Onward, a quest to find their dad with some magical creatures, you know?
with a decapitated set of legs, yes.
Anna, for people who do not know the Lovecraft story on which it was based, what's the gist of it for them?
It's grotesque. But in a fun way. So basically it centers around like a family who sort of like lives out in bumfuck nowhere a thing crashes on their farm and then weird shit starts to happen to them.
Yep.
Right. And they don't know that this is like, it's not like some obvious thing, like an alien spaceship or something. It was like a meteorite with weird spores and stuff.
Yeah.
And so they think they call out the police or like the local university lab graduate students or something.
Yeah, there's that one kid who's from like the arc from Miskatonic.
But yeah, just to clarify, I love that kid because he introduces himself like in the first scene. He's like, "Hi, I'm Howard Phillips," and it's like, oh, so he's literally just H.P. Lovecraft, but also they cast a black guy to play H.P. Lovecraft, so the old racist bastard is probably rolling in his grave.
Yeah, I didn't catch it the first time either. I mentioned it to my brother after you had mentioned it, Anna, and he pointed out that it's interestingly, the guy, he's a good-looking guy, but his facial features actually do kind of resemble the slightly odd features of Lovecraft.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was intentional, but
But I knew right away when I saw that I was probably going to enjoy it, and it only got I wasn't fully on board until that scene where Nick Cage is like snarfing down all the fruit in the kitchen, and he's like, "Oh, it tastes so shitty," and he's like throwing it around, and I was like, "All right, this is my movie."
Now, you know, the interesting thing is like. Nicolas Cage kind of doesn't really kind of cut loose during most of the movie.
Yeah, he's
and
very
actually, that
subdued.
That was kind of what I liked about it, was that it felt a little bit more like a subdued movie much of its time.
Yeah, it wasn't really until, like, probably the last 30 minutes that, like, the shit really hit the fan.
Mm-hmm.
There was no full-on Cage rage until the end.
Yeah, it's more like, well, it's kind of what I wanted from a Lovecraft movie, which is slow burn eeriness building to catastrophic horror.
Yeah.
I thought the writing was surprisingly good on the family. Like, I kind of immediately invested in them. They're all a little bit, they have their issues, but I guess what I liked was there wasn't a bad person in there.
Yeah.
Do y'all agree that there wasn't, like, oh, this is all their fault? Person, you know, there was some mistakes made, perhaps, but everybody was trying to do their best.
Yeah, no, everybody's basically a good character. I mean, they're all, like, they have their own issues, but yeah, nobody was like, aha, no one was the Walter Peck. No one turned off the power grid.
There was no one in the movie that made me go, yeah, you probably deserve this. That's probably good.
I also thought visually it was pretty really cool and had like that eeriness that you want from a Lovecraft movie. You know, just these spooky forest trees and like with the weird, I don't know if I want to quite say synthy soundtrack. I think it was like a normal soundtrack, but it was very kind of ambient and eerie.
That's kind of synthy. It actually reminded me of what I really liked about the soundtrack moments in like Watchmen.
Oh, interesting.
Where
it's
sort of like
the TV show or the movie?
The TV show. No, not the movie.
Well, I think the movie had okay soundtrack, but
it's just a little on the nose sometimes. But
talking about like the pop music, but I think it had a orchestral score too.
Wait, Nine Inch Nails didn't do the score for the Watchmen movie, did they?
No, they did for the TV show though.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's what I'm saying that I liked. I really liked the sort
of
like
yeah,
the way that they
kind of
subtly enhanced the plot
intensity to it that. It made you know, well, if nothing else, that this was kind of serious subject matter and that there was like a kind of an energetic, inevitability to things. It kind of had this energy to it.
Yeah, I definitely think that like the real unsung heroes of that movie were probably the work that the soundtrack did and also the like absolutely gorgeous like cinematography when they were like taking in sites like the, you know, all the trees and stuff and just like the vastness of how far outside of civilization that they were.
Right.
Like very in a subtle way enhanced the horror of it because it's really easy to forget, I think, sometimes how remote it is for like people who live in rural areas when you're not in a rural area. And so like the sort of like big tracking shots where they would show like where there's just fucking nothing for miles.
And it's, you know, it's initially like that's the reason they're there is they wanted to kind of get away from it because Cage's wife is recovering from like chemo and stuff, right?
Oh, is that?
Yeah.
I couldn't remember what that actually was. I was sort of zoned out for the first part of it because it was a little boring until stuff started getting crazy.
Were you watching it in the style of Tommy Chong's character? So we should say that there's an old sort of hermit who lives nearby. And in fact, in the story, the kid does buy like, or like goes there to smoke weed with him, I think.
Yeah.
And he, this is actually plot-wise, it's fairly accurate to the novella or short story, I guess, that Lovecraft wrote.
That was what I heard.
Yeah, and there is like a weird old hermit in there and all that stuff. He is not Tommy Chong, the weird stoner sort of paranoid guy that he's portrayed as. But I actually love that character.
Same. I thought it was really cool. Also, to clarify, I was watching it in a digital movie theater. I was in a Discord server with a bunch of friends, and we were watching it. So I was distracted by the chatter during the first part of the movie, because it does have a very slow burn, which that is definitely a downside to not being in a movie theater.
You know, since this craziness with quarantining and stuff has begun, I have, for the first time, experienced Twitch. I've watched something on Cast. I've done Zoom. So if there's a monosyllabic...
Dave, you're becoming a hacker.
If there's a monosyllabic digital interface to enjoy entertainment, I've done it.
Have you tried Queeby yet?
No, it has two syllables. I can't.
Oh, fair enough. That's fair.
Is that an actual thing?
Oh, God. It's TV for your phone. It's the worst.
Oh, wow. That
there's
it doesn't
a,
sound great.
A,
why do you need that?
There's a 90-day free trial, and Les, one of my compatriots on the TV Dudes podcast, said that we should sign up for it and watch these shows. So I've been dragged kicking and screaming into the world of Queeby. I haven't watched anything yet.
That sounds
dirty. But they're all like, they're little like 5 or 10 minute shows that you watch on your phone. And the best review I've seen was from, I can't remember who it was, but she was like, there is nothing on Queeby that doesn't feel like a BoJack Horseman sketch.
You know, I know that because of like, I'm going to say, Twitter and then, what was it, Vines, which are now gone, and now TikTok. We parceled entertainment into sort of smaller morsels is pretty yep. standard. I'm not a big fan of it. I have a short attention span, or my attention span has shortened over the years, but I don't really groove on that stuff.
Dave, we should start something. We should start a new online initiative called Morsels. Maybe like two page comics. They're just,
sure.
just comics 2 pages at a time.
Morsels really makes it appetizing sounding. I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Randy, you liked Color Out of Space as well, by the way. To
I did.
Up.
I really enjoy. I am a mild horror fan at best, but
interesting.
I really enjoyed Color Out of Space. It was interesting.
It does sound really messed up near the end. Like the last 20 minutes or so, I was like kind of genuinely disturbed.
Oh yeah, for sure.
We actually had to pause the movie so I could get up and walk away for a second.
Yeah.
when the mom and the son got like fused together, I was like, I'm gonna.
It wasn't even that
part of it. Like that part of it was like messed up and scary and stuff. But like the part where they were like trying to carry them upstairs to the attic, I was like, I gotta get up. Something fucked up's gonna happen, and it didn't. which is good because like that's incredible tension building. But like I was I gotta get out of here. I don't know where the dog is. I don't like this. But
you know, there's a story. But the guy who directed the movie, I think it's Richard Stanley.
I think that's right.
Is a famous weird Hollywood kind of recluse and he had last worked notably in the 1990s on the Island of Dr. Moreau movie that kind of became this mess, and he got fired from it. And like, what was it, Randy? He like allegedly showed up on the set disguised as one of the animal creatures
to
spy on the movie.
What?
Yeah, no, that's like actually true.
Oh my God!
He's a partaker of the hallucinogens in particular, I believe.
Maybe that's why the visuals in this movie were so beautiful.
I mean, they're really great. But he has made like the best Lovecraft movie I've seen, maybe ever. He wants to do a trilogy, and I hear that, like, I don't know how this was received overall because it had a limited run theatrically.
Supposedly from the chatter in my movie Discord. Critics have been pretty divided on it. Like, there are a lot of people, like, I think the three of us would fall into, the camp of who watched it and they were like, oh, this is dope as hell. Maybe, like, a cult classic in the making kind of thing.
Right.
And then there were other people who were just like, it's just Nick Cage yelling.
I think that's a superficial take on it.
Yeah, I think it's real popular to make fun of Nick Cage. So.
Yeah. But what I want is for him to get his other two movies. I want him to do the next one, which is Shadow Over Innsmouth, the one with the weird creatures interbreeding the sea creatures on the coastal town.
Yeah, and I also hope that the H.P. Lovecraft character that he casts in every one of these movies is just another different marginalized person that H.P. Lovecraft would have hated, so he can continue to roll until he spins so fast that his body explodes.
I think he'd appreciate that ending in a weird roundabout way.
Well, I guess we got to scrap the idea now because I would hate for him to appreciate it.
If nothing else, I would not mind if the guy who played a hydrologist in this movie, if he simply recurred. He's the guy who now kind of
like
knows what's a little bit about what's going on in the world. And I think he'd be an interesting either supporting character or maybe somebody to bring in when they need some creepy exposition.
Yeah. Or to do a terrifying monologue.
Yep.
So let's jump over to other movies. Dave, you and I have been watching Master Pancake on Twitch.
Yeah, that's the by their own admission ripoff of Mystery Science Theater 3000. That's our local Austin version of it. We've seen it live well over a dozen times. I feel like I've seen like 15, 16 in the theater, maybe.
Yeah, I've seen several, and now that they're doing it virtually, they actually, I guess they have it on YouTube. And what they do is they get on Twitch, a couple of the members, and they do sort of a pre-show where they talk about it, and then they throw to YouTube, and people chat next to it.
Yeah, it more or less does a very good job of simulating them doing their thing, which is very much Mystery Science Theater 3000, but sometimes with an, I'm going to say, a little bit more of an R-rated spin.
Yes.
Their own jokes, of course, that they've built up over the well over a decade of doing this, I think. Yep. Now
they will occasionally cut in video too. Like they forget what the one was, Back to the Future. They cut in a Teen Wolf scene. It's just perfect timing.
Yep. They often like to like in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, when there's a shot of the the camp, they interspliced it with the Ewok camp, I believe, from Return of the Jedi.
Yep.
They'll break out the Benny Hill music for certain scenes.
So they're doing like a pay what you want thing. They put up a PayPal and a Venmo link, and you can throw them some money for it. But they've been doing like Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, and they're showing like all their old mocks. And I watched the Labyrinth one, which I had not seen before, which was a ton of fun.
Yep.
And this last Saturday, I watched Back to the Future, which was also a lot of fun. They've also done they did Taken, which is one of the favorite ones I've seen in the theater.
Oh yeah, so good.
I forget what they're doing this weekend.
So this week is all good material. I last night didn't see all of it, but I saw parts of Bloodsport, the Van Damme martial art tournament movie.
Uh-huh.
Very entertaining. They interspliced in a music that included the Karate Kid "You're the Best Around" music.
That's amazing.
They're doing Twilight on Friday and Armageddon Saturday. So these are some good movies to see mocked.
Oh, man.
All you have to do is go by their page, click on their Twitch thing, and it just takes you there. You could be a cheap bastard and not pay them anything, but I recommend if you like it, you throw something their way. Between the sketches, they'll actually talk about... they'll like read some of the notes that came with people sending them money through Venmo, and people send some really funny, clever notes too. So, it's just another way to support some Austin entertainers that have rightly, I think, built up their legacy. As they may be a ripoff of Mystery Science Theater, but they're a really good ripoff.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I like them better than Mystery Science Theater.
Mystery Science Theater
never quite grabbed me. They always do bad movies. Master Pancake does. Mainstream movies you've seen, and it's way better.
Yeah,
I think so too. I kind of like the R-rated stuff, and I like occasionally when they'll be like, meanwhile in Pflugerville, when they like cut to some podunk town or something.
Yeah, they do a thing. They showed like a posh. There was a posh thing that showed up, I think, in Back to the Future. Like meanwhile in Westlake, and I was like, oh man, that's a niche joke that works in your Austin audiences.
Yep.
Yeah.
My favorite joke. And their master, and their one of, Back to the Future, was when Michael J. Fox has just arrived in the 50s, and he's in his hazmat suit, and he flips it back, and it kind of flares outward, and they said he looked like a Dilophosaurus about to spit, and it just killed me.
It does.
It does.
The other thing I like about watching it online, we should say also, they do skits that are hilarious, so like bad costumes, riffing on the thing, and they do that
midway through every movie. They get up on stage at the Alamo Draft House where this used to take place, and maybe and hopefully will
they get
soon.
They
do a very improv-y sketch with like bad costuming, like very deliberately bad costuming, and it's always a great time, especially if you've had a few beers.
It's always hilarious. And also, just I was really surprised by the Twitch commenters. I mean, these are all people from the Master Pancake fan page. They've been following them forever. There's some really funny stuff in those comments. Just like it is a great little add-on. When you and I were watching Labyrinth, we were sort of back and forthing on Facebook, like posting the quotes to each other.
Yep. They also, you know, on Twitch, I guess whoever the host is can highlight a quote and it appears up below on the screen.
Yeah,
some of the best comments get highlighted. But yeah, there's, I got to say, those people were on. They knew what they were doing.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to talk about this thing that I think Nick and I already talked about a little bit, and Dave, you and I talked about it. But Anna, you were so happy that I had finally watched Harley Quinn.
Yeah, I literally did not think it would ever happen.
I didn't either, but you guys were all talking so positively about it, so was everybody else, and finally we decided, just for my TV podcast, we're like, okay, let's go ahead and talk about this. And I gotta say, I also took the opportunity to watch Titans Season 2 and to watch the rest of Young Justice, and having watched that and Doom Patrol and everything else, Harley Quinn is the killer app of the DC app. It's the best thing on that network.
You know, Randy, I think you and I thought it was just going to be like, oh gosh, more dumb kind of Deadpool R-rated jokes or whatever.
And it is, but it works.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's so funny.
As y'all know, I have boycotted the Deadpool movies just to be a pain in the ass to people.
Yeah.
But I know that they're funny and R-rated, and that even, Randy, you enjoyed them too. And mm-hmm. I think this is like that, but you would probably say better, because it's just kind of off in its own thing, and it doesn't threaten to, like, one day crunch into the Marvel movies.
Yeah, it's definitely better than the Deadpool movies.
To clarify, though, Dave, yes, who likes the R-rated funniness of Master Pancake and yes, thinks that Nick Cage is crazy is a surface take, doesn't like Deadpool?
I don't like Deadpool either.
Yeah, well,
this has been widely known.
Yeah, well,
you know what's going on.
But
no, I think that Nick Cage is crazy is a weak surface take for Color Out of Space.
Oh, gotcha.
Only.
Okay.
As a general thing, yes, Nick Cage is a maniac, but he is weirdly reined in for like 70% of that movie.
Yeah,
and pleasantly, I think even.
So, Anna, you and I have not talked about Harley Quinn yet, and I'm curious.
We haven't.
There's some stuff where I'm curious to hear what you think, because one of the things I really like about this, uh-huh, I think that the voice casting is amazing. That's a big part of it. Like, all the voices are so good.
Oh, totally.
And the weirdness of, like, King Shark is like this woke nice guy, unless he smells blood in the water, in which case he starts murdering people.
Yeah.
And Ron Funches plays him, and he's great. Dr. Psycho as the man-hating guy who can't stop saying the C word.
Yeah, he's really the only character on the show that I don't like. I can acknowledge that he's funny, but I
love that character. It's Tony Hale playing him. I think they're doing some interesting stuff with him.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, it's, I mean, I laugh at him. I question his inclusion sometimes, given his history as a comic character.
Yeah.
Literally the entire show is delightful. And they definitely make fun of him for being awful.
Oh, yeah.
No one lets him get away with it, which is important.
No. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the show has its own spin on everybody. I've only seen a few episodes, and I thought it was really funny, even though I don't really do this kind of that particular kind of humor most of the time. But I thought it was really good. Let's see. And it's just, it's smart. I think we said this last time that it's, you know, it feels like it's a little bit of a, it's got elements of kind of Archer and what is it, Venture Brothers? Anything else that y'all think it, like, riffs on, or that it, like, is close to?
No, I think that's about right.
I think
right.
That's,
I mean,
probably
it feels of a piece with the Harley Quinn movie. Like definitely it feels like that same Harley in a lot of ways.
Now, answer me this, because I haven't seen it as much as y'all have. In that first season, the first episode had an arc about her kind of coming to realize and there was actually, like, a little bit of depth to this, that the Joker, you know, was just using her the whole time. Does it continue to have anything like that during the course of the season? Like, are there somewhat serious moments?
Oh, for sure. It's all about her getting out of her abusive relationship and realizing what her relationship with Ivy is like, and what their friendship is like. And everybody's got an arc. Like, I think Ivy's arc with Kite Man is weirdly touching at times.
Oh, I hate it. I hate it so much. I hate Kite Man.
So I want to ask you about this, Anna, because I know you love this cartoon, but, like, it is, like, complete lesbian erasure. Like, they've gotten rid of one of the few lesbian couples in DC Comics by not having Harley and Ivy as a couple.
Well, so they've talked about it in interviews and stuff where they were saying, like, we wanted to sort of, like, let Harley Quinn define herself as a character outside of a relationship, which is one of the reasons why we didn't immediately throw her into another relationship.
That makes sense.
But my major frustration is that Poison Ivy is, like, sort of, like, she's a strong and, like, knowledgeable and skilled person who has mm-hmm. her own personal drive and goals. And yep. the thing that I think is so frustrating is that, because this is like a sitcom trope that I think is super sexist, is like the badass woman who has no business being with this complete fucking dipshit who's just like, oh, but he's my dipshit, you know? And it's like, it drives me nuts. No offense to any dipshits out there who have great wives, but...
That is absolutely
I was going to say.
That is absolutely a TV trope. But the funny thing is, I think maybe part of why it's sometimes so frustrating is sometimes that does happen in real life. And
all
it's just,
the time.
It's just yeah. awful. When you know somebody is like, you're like, why are you with this Yahoo or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to be too much of a riot girl, but yeah, I mean, the standards for men's behavior is they're pretty low.
I'll say this: the thing they're trying to get across in this, and I think they do a pretty good job of it in general, is that Kite Man, for all that he is, God, he's such a bro and such a doofus, that he is genuine. Like he's not.
Yeah,
he's definitely not like the best guy in the world. But unlike even say like Batman and all these other guys who are sort of full of ego and this kind of thing, Kite Man is like he genuinely like that is who he is.
He just likes kites.
This is a weird aside, but
just
Anna,
likes kites.
I know you were watching Yu Yu Hakusho, a anime, and isn't like your favorite character in that kind of like a doofus bro with a heart of gold?
So here's the thing. Yes. Which is what I like about Kite Man. The mm-hmm. thing that I guess that I don't like about Kite Man is that he's sort of like casually misogynist. Like just the sort of like I don't know, he's a womanizer, even though he's kind of stupid about it. Like, those are the things that I don't really like. I do like that he's genuine. I do like that he's kind. Like he's
yeah.
sure he's dumb and he's kind of like a bro, but like he's at least a good, decent person. However, Kazuma Kuwabara from Yu Yu Hakusho is not a dumb womanizer. He in fact is a delinquent with a heart of gold who will die to protect a single cat, which is incredible.
Are you caught up on Harley Quinn? Have you seen this latest episode?
I am. I have watched the most recent one. And
okay, because the whole thing with him like being hung up on wanting the venue and Condiment King being like his nemesis, that all killed me. I loved
very funny, very funny. Yeah.
I love when he has to go get the plants for Poison Ivy and he touches the wrong one and she's like, okay, well that will paralyze you. And he's like, how long does it take to sit in? Don't worry about it. I totally didn't touch it.
I love also the bit with Mr. Freeze and his wife.
Yeah.
And just sort of like when Harley does the thing that she does.
Harley misjudging the whole situation.
Just
yeah.
completely misreading it. And King Shark being like, aw, damn, you really, really fucked with like the most woke ice-themed villain in Gotham. Just like
yep.
absolutely delightful, which is one thing that I will say about the show is that even though it like is like dumb and violent and crass, I think that it's like very, very smart about the ways that it applies dumb and violent and crass for the purposes of comedy.
I agree.
Which is what I think makes it very, very good.
Yeah. Also, it is weird. The Condiment King shows up. Kite Man is a major character.
Yeah.
They are doing basically no man's land in season two. It's
yeah.
crazy.
That was like one of the first things that I said, like when I was watching with my girlfriend who I've been watching Harley Quinn with. That's like our sort of like weekly ritual as we get yeah. up on Friday and we watch the new episode. That was like one of the first things that I said when they showed like all the villains had divided up Gotham. I was like, oh, so it's no man's land. They're actually yeah. doing some pretty serious like homages to actual comic arcs. This is really weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's crazy. And weirdly, that's one of the things that makes me want to pursue it, even though I hate laughter. Which is just knowing that it's covering one of the very few crossovers that I actually liked. And I know they're not covering it like the comics, but I kind of want to see how they do it.
It's good. I'm really enjoying it. Like I say, I honestly think it's the best thing. And I loved Young Justice, but I thought season three had some issues, and I think Harley Quinn is like perfection. This is like
their humor is just really like their writing is really strong on the show.
All right, so let's talk about another thing that Anna has just watched, which this was one of my favorite shows, and I'm so happy that you devoured this, and that's Letterkenny.
I fucking love Letterkenny.
Letterkenny is so how would you describe Letterkenny to people? Because it's one of those things where, like, I can't easily, like, it's about rural Canada, but there's something about it.
So, it actually, a lot of the things that I like about Letterkenny are the same things that I like about the Harley Quinn show, actually, is that it's frequently dumb, it's frequently crass, and it's frequently violent, but it's very intelligent about the way that it applies those things for mm-hmm. purposes of comedy. Like, even though a lot of what they do in the show is literally just stand around and rip on each other. Like, it's never mean. It doesn't make me feel bad at the end of
I've only mm-hmm. seen the first episode, but I noticed that it had a sort of stylized affectation of, like, these, you know, they reminded me of shows like, I don't know, maybe Community and stuff like that, just as far as, like, the delivery device. But it's, these rural doofuses and like, meth heads and jocks and stuff like that in Canada.
Well, what's interesting is that, like, they are sort of the lead guys are sort of these rural guys who run a fruit stand, but they're all the most woke guys in the world.
Oh, man, I love Squirrely Dan just being like, oh, yeah, my women's studies Squirrely professor, Miss Patricia's yep. or whatever. Like, oh, it's just delightful.
Miss Patricia, yeah.
They're all so woke.
Oh, that's interesting. Yep. I actually didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely built into it, yeah.
There's like a really extended bit that they go on where like Wayne is like, no, you can't use gay to mean bad anymore, because if you use gay to mean bad, that makes you a homophobe and we gotta beat the crap out of you. Like, it's real good.
Yeah.
It's
super funny. The dialogue stuff is good. They get on these like sort of pun run type things where they're bringing in like movie titles and they're referencing something.
Oh, man.
There's a runner in the early one of the early season episodes. I think it's first season. They build something called Fart Book, which is everybody making their own farts, and you identify people by their farts. Like, it is the weirdest combination of lowbrow and highbrow humor. Like,
oh yeah,
all this great dialogue humor, but there's also about like farting and drinking and fighting.
I was watching a friend was watching like some clip or something from it, and there was like a dude. Y'all are gonna know what I'm talking about if you've seen it, but he was like. Naked muscle guy doing a handstand.
Shorzy.
Yeah, that is
and talking
Shorzy.
Shit
yep.
with other people while he was doing it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's the same guy who plays Wayne, the lead character.
Yeah.
Okay. It was just so bizarre, but I watched it. It was a funny scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This show, by the way, dialogue, has infected everybody I know. Like, if people like are exposed to it, much like COVID-19, they get infected by it.
Jesus,
there's
but
a
with,
huge
but
call
with
and response
instead of death.
Yeah,
there's a huge call and response thing. Like, if you make some quotes, people will respond. I've started using a lot of those GIFs in response to people. There's like
yep.
the well, that's what I appreciate about you. Oh, is that what you appreciate about me?
Yeah,
and the to be fair. And
to be
a few
fair,
other things like they.
This is on Netflix, right? It's
on Hulu.
Like it's some nothing like
it's
nowhere, right? But then it got to Netflix.
It was on Canada's Crave channel, which I think is like their sort of HBO ish, and then it got picked up by Hulu. It's a Hulu exclusive now. They signed it up for like I don't know six more seasons or something.
Yeah.
But it's great. There's seven seasons of it. It's super fun.
It's actually,
I'm so glad that you enjoyed it, Anna.
Oh, I'm in love with it. Like, it's really funny because it happened at a very strange place. I've been playing in a chat RPG, which I assume you guys are probably also playing a lot of your weekly like D&D type stuff online as well.
I'm in a Roll20 Pathfinder group and a D&D group. Yeah,
but
I haven't played a role playing game in like a month or two, so I don't know anything about the.
I have been playing like this very grumpy, like frowns all the time, like pugilist character who is just constantly pissed off, but also is like very good natured and will throw a punch if you make her throw a punch. And I've been watching Letterkenny like off and on
yep.
in between playing this and thinking like, I just accidentally made Wayne from Letterkenny.
I was thinking that, yeah. He made Wayne.
Like, right down to the fact that I'm pretty sure I have literally said, I wish you weren't so fucking awkward, bud, in character in this game. So, it's like, it's been real delightful and just an absolute treat to have watched through this entire, like, bonkers show.
It's one of my favorite shows. I'm so glad I discovered it. I discovered it right when they came to ATX TV Fest and watched some and just fell completely in love with it. So
I actually,
yeah, it's a blast.
I watched I think it's probably from the first episode. It's been a really long time since I watched it in COVID-19 time, which is to say that it's probably only been about 3 days, but that feels like 10 years. But yeah. Like one of the first episodes where the hockey players come to the farm and they like start pulling their shirts off and they're like spitting at each other, basically. I watched
the very first episode.
Yeah, I watched that clip on Tumblr, like literally, like it must have been like 6 years ago or something. And I was just like, God, this is just absolutely delightful. Where the fuck is this from? And,
yep.
You know, that was, I assume, probably when it was on Crave or whatever it was that you said. And so seeing it on Hulu while I am ironically craving entertainment was like, oh, this is my salvation. I will watch this show about these dumb hicks who are absolutely not dumb hicks.
And then they do season two. They flip that and they have Wayne and Derry and Squirrely Dan spinning back all those lines at the two hockey guys.
Yeah, love it.
In episode one of season two, and it's such a smart show. It's so funny. Yeah, it's great. We're wrapping up our.
What? Y'all might have just convinced me to go ahead and watch a little bit.
Please watch it, Dave. Seriously.
You need to watch it so that we can all start quoting each other. All
right, fair enough.
Yeah.
All right, well, we are closing in on the end of our Zoom meeting here because we're only allowed 40 minutes at a time. So we're probably going to wrap up our podcast here. We have more to talk about because we always have more to talk about. So we'll be back for more at some point soon. We're going to keep doing this as we find time. Everybody out there, stay safe. Stay as sane as possible. If you can come out to the store for some curbside or that kind of thing, please do. We definitely appreciate the support. And I guess until next time, yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.